The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Welcome to a Wednesday, everybody. And it's a busy, busy news day. Now, we knew we were going to hear something from the Facebook Oversight Board regarding Donald Trump's future on Facebook. And sure enough, 9 o'clock sharp this morning, I had CNN on, and here's what happened there. This.
Breaking news this hour. At any moment, we will learn if former President Trump will be allowed back onto Facebook. Facebook's oversight board is publishing its decision any moment. We'll bring that to you as soon as we have it.
It's an interesting makeup on this board. You got a former prime minister of Denmark, former editor-in-chief of The Guardian, a former Nobel Peace Prize laureate from Yemen. A combination of voices there. We'll see where they come down. No matter the decision, it will have significant social and political consequences. Remember, the former president was suspended the day after the January 6th insurrection. This overpost that many felt incited the deadly violence, certainly refused to call them off. Will he now be banned forever? The controversy over Facebook's power growing. Hours ago, Trump launched a message board of his own, the platform boasting to be a place for him
An
to, quote, speak freely
website,
and
okay.
safely. And perhaps raise money freely. We have a team of journalists and analysts covering this momentous decision. We begin with CNN chief media correspondent Brian Stelter. Brian, you know, I don't want to get you to make a bet on where this decision will go, but perhaps you could tell us the significance of it.
This is about what's acceptable on online platforms that are privately controlled and who decides. And Jim, as you were coming to me, we do have the decision. I can read you the first sentence. Okay. It says the board has upheld Facebook's decision to restrict then-President Donald Trump's access to posting content. So in other words, Trump remains banned from Facebook. He will not be allowed back on the site. This is a remarkable example of a private platform run by Mark Zuckerberg.
Okay, that's enough of CNN. In fact, let's bring on a better expert. An old friend of the show, haven't spoken to in a while, Tim Carr of FreePress.net. What is your title over there, Tim? You're like
Well, it's the current title for me is Senior Director of Strategy. So, it means basically I do a lot of things.
You do a lot of things. And and we go back so many years and we haven't spoken in a while. So thank you for coming on today and welcome back. It's always great to hear from you, to see you. So what happened today? Tell us basically what this was about. We know. But
today was the culmination of a 4-month decision that should have taken all of 15 minutes, really, to decide.
Okay.
The Facebook Oversight Board, which is in your lead in, mentions about 20 very credible individuals, you know, Nobel laureates and professors of free speech and various human rights and legal matters who were formed. Out of the largesse, the generosity of Mark Zuckerberg, he created a $130 million trust that created this entity, which is supposedly independent, even though they're all getting paid six-figure incomes out of this Facebook trust.
Really? Wow.
Yes, for very little work. And they came together that they've only been active for about half a year now, but they one of the first cases, they've already decided on a couple of other cases, was in response to Facebook's January 7th decision to not ban, but what they say, indefinitely suspend Donald Trump.
Right.
And that was after Trump had tweeted in support of the insurrection on January 6th.
Okay.
So anyway, they came together and they made this decision to uphold the ban, but then they booted it back to Facebook and said, but we'll give you 6 months to determine what indefinitely ban or indefinitely suspend means.
Right.
And so in many ways, And Margaret Sullivan of the Washington Post and Kara Swisher of the New York Times both said that they're like passing the hot potato.
Right. Because
Facebook
they
say, look, you know, we don't really want to make a definite decision here. Facebook, you do it.
So these 20 people are being paid six figures each to be an independent oversight board. And, and they're given this this assignment, and they come back after all this time and say, we don't have clear enough guidelines as to how to rule on this. So we'll keep the suspension for another 6 months and send it back to you, Facebook, for you to come up with better rules. Is that basically what happened?
It's basically what happened. And in many ways, it's a demonstration. And the whole premise, let's just start from the beginning. The whole premise of having a Supreme Court for a private company is ridiculous.
Yes.
We have rules and regulations that are called rules and regulation. They're laws that are decided by government and they're imposed by various regulators. There are a lot of proposals out there. Some of them are good. Some of them are bad about how to rein in the immense power of Facebook. There is no company in the history of the world that can boast 2.7 billion regular users. I mean, this is a new thing that has the potential to incite riots and undermine democracy. Mm-hmm. And as we have seen that, we have seen it being used by people, not only Donald Trump, but tyrants in the Philippines, in Myanmar, and elsewhere, to incite violence against those that these powerful dictators don't like. So it is a dangerous tool. It shouldn't be up to this supposedly independent oversight board, 20 individuals receiving six-figure incomes from Facebook, to make these weighty decisions.
And I agree with you, but the question is, who then should it be up to? This is a whole new animal. You know, 10 years ago, I know Facebook was there 10 years ago, but didn't have the reach and the power that it does now. And we see the power of Facebook all the time. We saw it on January 6th. We see it constantly. We saw it in Trump's election and the fact that he was able to turn out 73 or 4 million people to vote for him. That's why they were so, you know, putting so much stock in getting reinstated, because Trump inconceivably is still the titular head of the Republican Party. Go figure. And he needs this. And without it there, he's hindered a little bit. But it's this new entity, this powerful being that's everywhere. And who does have the right to regulate it? I mean, it's not even limited to one country. It's a global thing, but it is a private company owned by Mark Zuckerberg and stockholders, I guess. This is a weird, it's a new animal, right?
It is, but it also, there are existing laws, right? Mm-hmm. We have antitrust laws in the United States to deal with a company that has become too large and powerful. And there are people within the Justice Department who oversees antitrust who are taking a serious look at Facebook. They're not only taking a serious look at Facebook, they're taking a serious look at Google, which controls search. They're taking a serious look at Amazon, which controls online advertising. All of these companies are also dominant in the online advertising market.
Right.
And they control online advertising. What's happened, as you know, because you're a veteran of traditional media,
right,
is that as soon as they came along and dominated online advertising, revenues for traditional media that actually produced journalism, dried up.
Right.
And so not only have we created these monsters, and in the case of Facebook, a monster that spreads disinformation about COVID-19, a monster that spreads disinformation about the election results and that incites racists and fascists to violent acts against people. But they are earning money at the expense of the sort of the traditional media outlets and the journalism enterprises that would debunk a lot of these lies and information, that would challenge the corporate power of these tyrants and the corporate or the the political power of these tyrants and the corporate power of these large companies. So we have a dilemma, and we have a number of solutions. I mentioned antitrust, but we've also proposed taxing the online advertising revenues of these companies to create what's called the public interest media endowment that would then fund the antidote.
The antidote. Okay.
Lies and disinformation. That would be journalism, fund public interest journalism out of taxes on the advertising dollars of these large giants. Of course, that proposal is something that Free Press has put forward and is being taken very seriously.
Now, Tim Carr, again, as we said, it's been a while since we've spoken, but we spent a lot of time on the air together over the years talking about things such as net neutrality. Haven't heard that term in a while. And everything has been turned upside down and inside out. The whole business model is everything is different now because of the reach of the internet. And one of the questions is, should the internet be regulated like a utility? Because that's basically what it's become. But we have people running these companies on it and making decisions. Let me give you a prime example of what we're up against here. Me, as an independent media outlet, I push my show out. I stream audio and I stream video. I stream video to, I was streaming to YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Twitch. I'm now suspended from YouTube because from streaming live on YouTube for 90 days because I guess one of their bots or somebody went back to a show from 2015 and buried deep in the show, I played a Green News report. So it wasn't even, you know, it was a break I took. I played a Green News report and the bumper music they used at the end of the Green News report was a Don Henley song. 30 seconds of a Don Henley song. This is the second time I've been hit by Don Henley song. I used one, a different one, I Will Not Go Quietly, to punctuate a news story about Elizabeth Warren when it was the Still She Persisted thing. I used it as a punctuation mark, got suspended from streaming for 3 months for daring to play 20 seconds of a Don Henley song. Right. The thing is, they won't even tell you what your offense was. They're just saying you're gone for 90 days. I went through and listened to the show the minute I heard Don Henley. I'm like, okay, that's what it was. But they don't tell you what it was. No. My husband has been suspended. Twitter took down his account. Facebook suspended him. LinkedIn suspended him. Now, you know, he tends to be passionate like I am, but they don't tell you what your offense is and they can just cut you off.
I mean, one of the things that Free Press is involved in is an organization called Change the Terms, which is to change the terms of service that these online platforms have to include things like due process.
Please.
There are legitimate cases. Doesn't sound like yours are them. It sounds like you are well within the realm of fair use. There are legitimate cases for deplatforming people.
Right.
But you have to be transparent about that process. If you are going to take down someone for organizing racist violence against people, which seems very legitimate, a very legitimate action.
Yes.
Deplatform that individual, you also have to be very transparent about that process.
Right. You have to tell them what the offense was, and they don't.
They don't. And Facebook has hired tens of thousands of content moderators, and they're usually in sweatshops, underpaid, having to review mountains and mountains of material and making decisions that some can seem very arbitrary. So one of the things that the Change the Terms Coalition has asked for is due process, an appeal process whereby the platforms have to make their case. So at the very least, you understand why. And can have, you know, can have your case reconsidered.
Right. But again, it was pulling teeth to get YouTube to respond to me to say what was the content that violated the copyright. What was my offense? And they don't feel like they have to tell you. And again, I went and found out myself just by listening back to the podcast, the audio podcast that I had still from 5 years ago, because they took down the video. So I couldn't even go back and watch the video to find out what it was. It's unilateral. And they say, you're out of here. Well, that's what they were doing to him now on LinkedIn, of all places. They don't tell you why. So it's very one-sided. There, it seems like it's the Wild West, and he who holds the keys decides how it goes. Obviously, that can't fly for too much longer.
Well, the problem with these platforms is that they've emphasized growth. Mm-hmm. So now that you have Facebook with 2.7 billion active members, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, the old saying from the financial crisis was that these banks were too big
to fail. Right.
And the opposite is true for Facebook. It's too big not to fail.
Right.
There is no way it can manage the amount of content. This is true for YouTube. It's true for the other large platforms. There's no way that they can manage the amount of content that's flowing across their pipes in a way that's fair and equitable. And some have said, well, they should just not manage it and have it be a free-for-all. Anybody can post anything. They won't do anything. And that's dangerous.
That is dangerous
in the era of Trumpism.
That's right.
And Trump is not the only tyrant out there. And some of these others, as I mentioned, the Philippines and Myanmar and elsewhere in India now are doing great harm to people they don't like. And they're using these platforms as a tool to do that. So
absolutely,
so it is a bit of a catch-22. And you could say, well, then let's break them up. Let's make them less big so they can manage all of this content better. But the problem that's behind that is the business model.
Right.
They use this engagement business model where they want to keep you on their sites so that they can sell data about you to advertisers. And they found that the most effective way to engage people is with divisive content, with partisan content, mm-hmm. with content that makes people angry. Instead of content that, you know, would make someone want to get out and vote or, you know, do something good in their community. And so they have hidden that truth for a while. There were reports that Facebook commissioned that showed that the divisive content drove engagement, and obviously engagement drives revenues.
Yeah.
And they buried those reports. So, you know, we can talk for hours about this stuff because it happens every week. There's a Facebook headline every week about the way it has failed to live up to its own standards to serve the public interest.
Right. And they enforce their standards, such as they are, so arbitrarily, where right. Steve Bannon is still on Facebook or Twitter or whatever, but you know, I'm suspended, and I got suspended from Facebook once for somebody made a really ugly comment, and I said something. It's like, that's, you're really ugly, and I was
really?
Suspended for bullying. Like I was calling somebody ugly when I was talking about their demeanor, their you know, the way they acted to someone else. I wasn't calling them physically ugly, but they called me out for bullying. The way it's obviously there's somebody monitoring for keywords, and you make, would you say a word ugly used right. in a totally different context, and I'm suspended for 3 days. I mean, stuff like that is just, it's so arbitrary. And that's why I say there should be some kind of a rule or some kind of a regulatory body overseeing this. But how do you do it when it's a private company? That's why I go back to, maybe the internet should be a utility, and social networks, again, they're an entity unto themselves. Maybe they need a special classification, and they shouldn't be in private hands. I don't know what the answer is. Now, freepress.net, you guys are saying that Trump's suspension from Facebook should be permanent. Now, there yes. are some other people that I know who are, you know, good liberals even, who are uncomfortable with that, saying, well, if they right. can do that to him, they can turn around and do it to us. I mean, I'm looking at some of the right winger comments on social media about Trump's suspension, and, you know, Mark Meadows, it's a sad day for America, a sad day for Facebook, because I could tell you a number of members of Congress are now looking at, do they break up Facebook? Do they make sure they don't have a monopoly? They're talking about there's this censorship of the right. But meanwhile, 9 of the top 10 Facebook posts and sites are conservative. So you can't even qualify it that way.
No, you can't. And the First Amendment free speech issues are sort of backwards in this yeah. case, because obviously the First Amendment prevents government censorship. Facebook is not the government. In fact, in the scenario with Trump, the government representative in that conflict was Donald Trump.
Right.
And Donald Trump, as a result of being having some of his tweets corrected when Twitter was doing that with his tweets before Twitter banned him.
Right.
Had proposed government legislation that would require that Twitter not fact check him. And so the First Amendment argument kind of falls apart when you consider that this is a private entity. And I think one of the more interesting paths that we have chosen is to try to look at better alternatives. Is it possible for there to be a non-commercial social network, something equivalent to what non-commercial public broadcasting is to commercial television?
Right.
That doesn't have a profit incentive that makes these companies want to promote dangerous content that harms democracy. Is there a way, as we have proposed, to tax these very large companies and use those revenues to support the antidote to the spread of lies and information, and that's public interest journalism? Right now, the Public Broadcasting Act in the United States is more than 50 years old, and it was designed to support and throws out about $440 million a year to support public
radio
and public television.
Right.
Sure, you know, okay, somewhat antiquated. There are new models for journalism, and you're a perfect example of that. That needs funding and support as well. Should we revisit that idea and have a more robust, independent, non-commercial media system in the United States that's funded by through new funds, potentially through this tax of online advertising?
Right.
Facebook and the Googles of the world.
Okay. Now, does that take us back to the talk about net neutrality? I know when we talked about net neutrality, it was about keeping some equality so that a company, say AT&T, couldn't charge me more for streaming my video than they charge the guy next door or CNN, so that, you know, the theory was they're going to slow down the little guys so that the big guys who pay money, more money, can get a faster stream. We lost that fight. I don't know that has anything been done on that front. I mean,
well,
where are we?
Funny you should ask.
Yes.
It has been a very long fight because you and I have been in the trenches for more than a decade now.
That's right.
The fight for net neutrality to protect everyone's access to an open internet. We temporarily lost the battle during the Trump administration when the Trump FCC under then Chair Ajit Pai reversed a victory that we had won in 2015 that created net neutrality rules. And those rules prevented large phone and cable companies from blocking your ability to access everything else that's online. Now that we have a new FCC and a new administration, one of the pledges that the Biden administration has made is to restore those net neutrality protections. Now, we're just past the first 100 days of this administration. This was not a first 100 days priority, given all of the other things that are going on. My goodness.
Yes.
But it is something that will be happening in the remainder of this year. So net neutrality is something that we need to get vigilant about again and get active about again and make sure that our members of Congress and that the FCC knows that we need to restore these rights.
And, you know, you're the perfect person to be talking to now about this. For those who aren't familiar with freepress.net, why don't you tell them who you guys are? You've been around for a long time, what you do.
Sure. We've been around for about 16-17 years. Wow. We have 1.4 million members. And the goal of Free Press is to engage people in policy debates around the future of the media in the United States, the future of journalism, the future of access to the internet, our rights to connect and communicate without large corporations acting as gatekeepers. And we've been around for as I said, about 17 years, and we have a very large list of people who are very active, who write letters to their members of Congress, who call the FCC, will show up at rallies to support things like net neutrality, to support new ideas for funding journalism in the United States, and to also protest against the power of companies like Facebook, like AT&T, like Comcast, that really dominate policy debates about the media in the United States.
And, you know, there's so many. Again, it's been a long time since we've spoken, and my list of grievances has grown. And I could go through it. I mean, from what I just told you about being suspended from YouTube and that stuff, that's got to be fixed. Number one, maybe there should be some kind of a licensing process where if you're going to do a online program like this, where you get you get some kind of a license that says, yes, you are, you can do this, you have access to the information superhighway, and you're not going to be arbitrarily taken down by a YouTube. But that's
it's interesting that you mentioned that, because Reporters Without Borders, which is a global journalism rights organization, has a proposal out there called the Journalism Trust Initiative, which is kind of like how you certify organic food, where you certify. It's a process whereby journalism outlets can be certified in, and it, they have a very elaborate process.
Like accredited, like you get accredited.
So that bias, it's really objective, that bias, there's no political bias involved. It's really about the news production values of the outlet. But there is something out there that's kind of like that. It's a certification process. It's not official. When you get into this issue of licensing or government accreditation,
I know,
for news outlets, the First Amendment,
I know it's a slippery slope. But then you come upon what we have now. The FCC regulates over-the-air broadcasting, terrestrial broadcasting, which wasn't even a word when it was just terrestrial broadcasting. It was just broadcasting. FCC regulates them. Cable comes in. They are not under the auspices of the FCC. So a channel like Fox or OAN or Newsmax can call themselves a news channel when they're a propaganda channel. Now, they couldn't, if they were over the air, if Fox was putting the Fox News Channel on the Fox TV stations, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think they could get away with calling themselves news. Could they?
They could. However, by virtue of going over the airwaves in that way, people have the opportunity to challenge their licenses,
right,
and all their licenses if they're not serving the public interest. And I think you could probably make a pretty compelling case that that based on the lies and disinformation about the election, about COVID, that those stations are not doing so.
Right.
And there's another way. And so one of the ways that we've addressed this issue, you're right, cable channels aren't held to the same regulatory standards as broadcast television. Mm-hmm. But we have successfully organized advertiser boycotts of Tucker Carlson's show. That's why you only see House ads and MyPillow ads if you have the misfortune of tuning in.
I don't see who his advertisers are. Right.
And which I don't watch, but
no, nor
that's
do
what I hear here. And we've been very involved in those advertising boycotts. But we've also looked at issues like a la carte. When we pay our cable television bill, when we pay like a satellite TV bill, we get these bundled packages of channels. And Fox News Channel, One America sometimes, Newsmax sometimes, are a part of that bundle, which means that they're getting paid.
That's
they're getting
right.
paid by you, the right. cable subscriber, whether you want to watch them or not. And Fox News, they're called carriage fees. Fox News Channel, News Corp, Fox Television has been very persuasive in extorting cable companies to pay them very large carriage fees. Wow. And of course, those carriage fees are tucked into your monthly bill.
Sure.
So there is the majority of cable news subscribers don't watch Fox News Channel, and they might find a lot of the content on Fox News Channel to be very
offensive,
objectionable, racist,
right?
Hateful.
Yeah.
But they don't. They're not aware that they're paying for that. They're paying for that through their cable bill, through these carriage fees. And there are ways that we can attack that. We can go after carriage fees. We can ask our cable subscribers to take Fox News Channel out of that bundle, out of that standard bundle, so that we don't have to pay. It amounts to about $2 a month per subscriber. We don't have to pay the $2 to promote hate and disinformation.
Right. We shouldn't have to. But, you know, this goes to even a bigger picture here. The media landscape has changed exponentially since 1996. Well, 1996 was when the Telecommunications Act was passed. It was under Bill Clinton. It destroyed my industry because at the time I was working in radio. And I remember getting a letter from AFTRA, because I was in Los Angeles at the time, I was part of the union, saying what's coming will kill our industry. And sure enough, it did. It did away with the ownership caps. It used to be one company could own one AM, one FM, one television station in a market with a cap of, I think it was like 7, 7, and 7 overall. Well, one of the many things that the Telecommunications Act did was, do away with those limits. So now one company can own 7 radio stations in a market plus a TV station. And now the Supreme Court just unanimously decided that even those ownership limits were too strict. So now one company can own, I think it's like 8 radio stations, 2 television stations, and a newspaper in the same market. They could be the only owner of media in a particular city and control all the different voices, but all controlled by one. And the Supreme Court ruled unanimously that that's the way to go. What am I missing?
You'll remember these old fights over media consolidation, where a company that used to be called a Clear Channel Communications, yes, it's now been rebranded as iHeart.
Or as I call them, iHeart Media.
iHeart Media, that's good. iHeart Media, at one point owned more than 1,000 stations, and they syndicated coverage across those so that local stations, local journalists were given pink slips because it was sort of cookie cutter content. There were rules in place. The FCC has never been a cop on the beat when it came to enforcing rules against media consolidation, even though the agency's central mandate is to promote competition, localism, and diversity over the airwaves. It has done a very poor job of that, to the point today where women and people of color own very few stations.
That's right.
Disproportionately low compared to the U.S. population. And so it's a real failing in the part of the FCC. And the Supreme Court didn't recognize that. They didn't recognize this failure. And they didn't recognize that the FCC's inability to count that and act on it was something that it urgently needed to do. But that doesn't mean that we can't get the FCC to change its procedures. We do have a Democratic administration. Mm-hmm. We hope to soon have 5 FCC commissioners. There's still only 4,
right,
because they haven't appointed the third Democrat that can readdress those issues. And that's another priority in the work that we hope to get done during this administration.
Oh, good. So I'm glad to know that you guys are on it, because these are the things that make my head explode.
We argued that case before the Supreme Court.
Did you?
On behalf of the public interest.
Oh, wow. I should have called you then, because I was here screaming about it. Like, what the hell? Really? Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan? Seriously? What are they thinking? How is it? I mean, it's the whole reason for diversity in media is to have a variety of voices on the airwaves. To say one company can own all the different media outlets, cross-pollinating them from television to radio to newspaper, and own every voice in town, how is that democratic?
No, I mean, media pluralism and the health of our democracy are two intertwined issues, and the FCC has been the agency that was supposed to provide oversight. And it's a classic case of industry capture of a regulatory body, whereby powerful lobbyists at the National Association of Broadcaster and cable working cable and telecom companies have managed to influence policymaking at the FCC for decades. That's the central purpose of my organization, Free Press, is to rebalance that equation, to bring the public voice back into the policymaking process, and so that we don't see this failure of oversight of media diversity. We don't see the ability for a single company to own so many stations, both broadcast, both television and radio and print, in a single market, to the point that there are no alternative views.
Right.
This is a lifelong battle. for a lot of us, myself included.
I know.
But you know, we are making some progress. We do have some hopeful signs in this new administration, or newish. It's been around for 100 days now.
Right.
And we're also very encouraged by some of the people they're appointing to make some of these decisions. So,
well, that's good, because I need to hear this, because frankly, we're not hearing it. Maybe I need to just invite you on the show more often, Tim Carr, because this is, you know, we've already seeded the airwaves, like the radio airwaves. Used to be, you know, when I got into radio in the olden days, I worked out of college at WMCA in New York, which was a talk station, which had right-wing voices, had progressive voices, had a psychologist and a financial guy. It was everybody on this one station, and you had a variety of different voices and opinions. And the fairness doctrine was still in effect. And so I have, you know, I'm a pack rat, so I still have old papers and stuff. And I've got responses from people that I sent letters to offering them time to respond on a certain issue, so that we were covering both sides. That doesn't exist anymore. And basically, the AM airwaves is a right wing wasteland. It used to be you could hear Rush Limbaugh. You could get in the car in Florida, drive across country up to Washington State, and never lose Rush Limbaugh on the station. But you could go days without finding a liberal or progressive voice.
Right.
We have no voice on the airwaves. So we've been relegated to the internet, which is fine. It's the new frontier. But now all these forces are saying, well, you can't be on YouTube, and you can't say this, and you can't play 20 seconds of a song. Even though when I do on YouTube, I get these copyright content matches, so that somebody will say, well, you played 20 seconds of my song. It's fine. I'm not filing a copyright strike, but I'm going to take any revenue you earn from this stream. Fine, because I make pennies anyway. So take the money, but don't violate my copyright. So I'm suspended. And this is what Henley's people apparently do. So it's just such a wild west, and there's no rules that you know what you can do so you don't run afoul of them. And there's no fairness. So we need something to fix the Wild West.
I think the news economy is broken in a lot of ways.
Very much so.
It's broken not just because of the rise of the Googles and the Facebooks of the world, who have stolen or misappropriated a lot of the advertising revenue. And these are companies that don't support journalism. In the old days, your advertising dollar went to a newspaper that actually employed a newsroom.
That's right.
Or a radio station that actually employed a newsroom. The news economy hasn't kept pace with the digital age. It's broken. And we argue that in order for journalism to survive in the 21st century, we need to rethink the economics and invest in a more robust non-commercial media system. And if you look at other countries like the UK,
BBC,
countries in Northern Asia and in Europe, they pay anywhere between $70 and $120 per capita to support non-commercial media in their countries. In the United States, you know how much we pay per capita?
2 cents.
It's not $70. It's not $120. It's $1.43.
I'm surprised it's that much. And they're always talking about cutting funding for public broadcasting because they don't see they don't see the value of it.
It's woefully underfunded. And I think we really need to rethink the news economics and make sure. And there are proposals out there that would allow people to use a tax credit, for example, for subscribing to their favorite news outlet. So they could subscribe to your show, Nicole, and you would receive that subscription money, and they get a tax credit for it. So there are a lot of proposals out there.
Okay, good.
There are even members of Congress who are taking some of those proposals seriously.
Really? Can you tell me who are the champions on this? I know Al Franken was, but he's not there anymore. And you know,
Maria Cantwell, Washington State, has been taking a deep look at these things. There are a number of members in both the Senate and the House. And there's some legislation that's been proposed. Some of it's better than others. There's a legislation that proposes to study the issue, which I guess is better than nothing. But we really need to mobilize people around the urgency of this issue, the need for quality news and information that debunks the kind of lies and disinformation that has flooded the internet.
Right. And when you, taking it full circle, when you go back to Facebook, part of the reason Donald Trump was taken off of Facebook and Twitter was because of the lies, because of the misinformation he was putting out there and putting it out as fact. That plus, you know, inciting an insurrection at the Capitol. But the bad information, I mean, you'll get flagged if you post bad information about COVID, if you post misinformation about a candidate or something. So he should be held to the same standards as the rest of us. Right. If I were to post the kind of shit that he does, I would have been banned a long time ago. They gave him a lot of leeway. And so now, you know, the Republicans are screaming, oh, it's censorship of conservative voices. That's not what it is at all. But again, we're in the Wild West. So this is what you guys do at freepress.net. I hope people go visit the site and maybe support your work, because we need you now more than ever.
Well, we're keeping at it. And, you know, we understand these issues, and we understand, you know, we've talked to a lot of journalists, a lot of people like you who really been on the front lines of this issue, who really understand it in a very deep way, because you've experienced, you've lived it firsthand.
I have lived it. I've lived it from pre-1996 to today. And
yes,
it's made a huge impact on my life. Look, you know, my career was in radio since 1979. And now, you know, I wouldn't change anything. At least here I can do and say what I want. I'm making about an eighth of what I used to make in terms of income, barely getting by. But at least I have my integrity, and I'm not, I don't have some Clear Channel iHeartRadio overlord telling me what I can and can't say. But still, I have YouTube saying, but you can't say it on our channel anymore. There's got to be a better way. So,
right. And it's, you know, it's the fact that you have a dependency on, you know, and I'm not saying this in a bad way, but right, you have a dependency on YouTube.
Of course.
You have a dependency on Facebook. You have to go there because that's where the people are.
Exactly.
Just the reality of that situation. That's problematic, right? Because these are not good companies.
No.
They're not accountable companies. They don't subject you to due process. They make arbitrary decisions.
That's right.
They allow tyrants to have a voice because, in Mark Zuckerberg's understanding of things, they have a different standard for content moderation for the likes of Donald Trump than they do for normal people. That kind of upturns the whole idea of journalism, right? The idea of journalism is that you give voice to the voiceless, not give those. You know, Donald Trump's not being censored.
Not at all.
He may be kicked off of Facebook, but he can walk up to any podium anywhere and have journalists.
And he could go over to Fox and have a huge audience any hour, any day.
This is not a voiceless individual.
Right.
Some of us at times wish he were voiceless, but he has a podium wherever he goes.
Right.
And so, I mean, when we think about censorship, let's really think about who the victims are. And it's not people like Donald Trump. It's not people like any of the prominent conservatives, like Ben Shapiro, who are crowing, or Ted Cruz, who are crowing about this issue because they've done the focus grouping, and they know that this kind of cultural war, this kind of issue about elite Silicon Valley billionaires censoring, everyday conservatives generates, I don't know, money, I guess.
So
they keep at it. They keep at it, even though there isn't an ounce of truth to any of it.
So. Right. But you know who's being hurt by this? The people who, you know, turn to Fox or Breitbart for their news, who don't understand that that's one voice, that you need to get a variety of voices and make your, you know, come to your own conclusions if you want to listen to that kind of crap, because it's not news, it's propaganda. And they're the ones, 70% of Republicans believe that Donald Trump won the election and Joe Biden stole it, because that's what they're being told by a channel that calls itself news. That's who's being hurt. We all are.
Yes. And again, you know, people need more choices. We need more diverse ownership of the media. We need more robust funding of non-commercial independent journalism. We need to rethink the news economy. We need to protect the open internet so that everybody has access, and large phone and cable companies can't decide what websites you go to and what websites you can't go to.
Exactly.
You know, there's a raft of issues, but they all revolve around this idea of ensuring that our media system promotes a diverse, multiracial, democratic system.
Which it doesn't right now. It does
it
not.
It doesn't right now. And there's a history that shows that, you know, systemic racism has been a problem within traditional media as much as it has been a problem within other industries and institutions. And so we have a reckoning to do on a lot of fronts.
No kidding. No kidding.
But we're doing the work.
Good. I'm so glad to hear it. So freepress.net is where they're doing the work. So go support them if you're in a position to do so. Tim Carr, it's great to catch up with you. I'm sorry I threw a lot on you today because, again, we haven't spoken in a while. I hope to rectify that. I hope you'll come back more often because these are really important.
Happy to catch up.
Great. Me too. Thank you so much. We'll talk soon. Appreciate it. You too. Bye-bye. Tim Carr, one of the really good guys. Find him on Twitter at Tim Carr, T-I-M-K-A-R-R. And yes, do follow freepress.net because they do great work. And again, we weren't kidding when he said we've been at this for well over a decade. I mean, this goes way, way back. And it's only gotten worse. So I need to stay on him to make sure we're getting, you know, the attention. But they're doing the work, whether I harp on him about it or not. All right. I guess Donald Trump issued some kind of statement about, you know, the Facebook ban. But I have a secret weapon and was able to get a personal video of Donald Trump's freak out about the Facebook thing. And I know, look, I hate to assault your ears, but really this one is worth listening to. So what's the matter, Donald? You have a sad today?
Hey. This morning, your president, and still your president, was just having a nice breakfast, you know, sitting there, and Uber Eats delivered me a very powerful selection of sausage egg McMuffins, which normally I don't like my breakfast sandwiches to be sort of kind of biracial. You know, you've got sort of the white muffin and the almost triracial, the sort of yellow egg and then the African-American sausage.
Oh,
relax,
God.
Mike. Okay, I'm just talking about the food. And then I'm eating it, thinking everything is okay. And then somebody comes in and they say, sir, and I go, what do you want? And they said, you've been banned from Facebook and Instagram again. And I said, you know, these radical left social media companies, it's such a disgrace. You know, because now I can't communicate in the DMs on Instagram with the models. The big-breasted ones, not the ones with the large booties.
Oh.
I save that for Ben Carson. But this is so typical. Okay, so we're going to have to, you know, we're probably going to have to storm Facebook headquarters, okay? My great patriots, bikers for Trump, hackers for Trump, and, you know, our most powerful cyber group, the people who get mad at their computers and smash them against the floor because they're stupid for Trump. We're going to have to form a very strong coalition that'll make January 6th look like Woodstock. So we're going to meet up, follow me. We're going to Facebook headquarters. I'll meet you down there.
Oh, God.
And we've got to fight for our democracy, for our internet. Okay. Soon they're going to be telling you you can't access all sorts of other things on the internet. Okay. They've already done such horrible things to our friends at Pornhub.
Oh, God.
And we got to fight. We have to fight or we won't have an internet again. So I'm going to go continue my strong McDonald's breakfast, and I'll meet you at Facebook headquarters later today. Okay, so bye-bye, and we'll see what happens.
Oi. In case you were wondering, that is the comedy genius of J.L. Coven, who still does the best Trump not that you want to do a good Trump, but, you know, when you want to make Trump say the things you want to make him say, you go to J.L. Coven. All right. Hey, our friend Bruce W. Nelson, also known as Mangy Fetlocks, has a little song for Donald Trump. I think it's time we hear that. Take it away, Mangy.
While Dems have got a donkey as a mascot, I have thought that makes no sense to me at all, alas. For down at Mar-a-Lago, the Republicans now keep what well may be the world's biggest ass. They gather there pathetically to kiss his hairy rump. He grins like an old jackass when they do. While Dems may have a donkey, GOPers have a Trump. The donkey's the more pleasant of the two. Somebody should tell Ted Cruz.
I guess, you know, he was with Donald last night at Mar-a-Lago because everybody's going to kiss the ring. One more thing. You know, they're driving Liz Cheney out of leadership. I am no fan of any Cheney, but I tell you, I got newfound respect for Liz Cheney, because at this point she's saying she knows they're trying to kick her out of leadership, that it will get done. But she said she's not going to fight back, because if it means that she can't tell the truth, that she's got to participate in this big lie, then let them kick her out. So good for her. Again, this just shows that we can find common ground even with the people we most viscerally disagree with. But speaking of Liz Cheney or Cheney, Mangy has a song for her too, and the Republicans.
Howdy, folks. Mangy Fetlocks here. Republicans are sick to death of their colleague Liz Cheney, who had the nerve to go and be both female and quite brainy. The rule among Republicans adhered to down the line is they should all share Donald's brain together at one time. The idea of having your own thoughts, as with Miss Lizzie, Kevin McCarthy says, makes him lightheaded and quite dizzy. Kevin's never actually had a thought, so he just can't even imagine what it's like. So boldly the Republicans will squelch the rebel Liz, because the truth can only be what Donald says it is.
There you go. Mangy Fetlocks, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Sure. Thank you, Mangy Fetlocks, also known as Bruce W. Nelson. This guy, I believe he was a music teacher. I made the mistake when I first discovered him on YouTube. I thought he was Jeff Daniels, because he looks like, here, look, doesn't this look like it could be Jeff Daniels, for those of you watching on video? Because Jeff Daniels plays guitar and sings too. I was convinced it was Jeff Daniels doing a character, and I played one of his videos and I'm like, he doesn't say Jeff Daniels anywhere on the site, but I promise you it's him. And I get an email from Bruce W. Nelson saying, not Jeff Daniels. So I did a huge mea culpa. I was wrong, but he's great. And so I made a new friend, and he posts like two of these songs every day on YouTube, and they're spot on in terms of commentary. And musically, he's excellent. He plays guitar, he plays keyboards, he sings. You see what happens when you explore the YouTubes, you mine it for great talent. That's what I come up with. I do this to keep my sanity, because with, you know, things are better with Biden. Things are better in the days, you know, post Trump, but he's still out there. He's the head of the Republican Party, which blows my mind, because he lost the election. He lost the Senate, didn't get back the House, and any other year, the candidate, the failed presidential candidate would just ride off into the sunset, but not Donald Trump, because he's Teflon. Unbelievable. And I do fear that he will rally his MAGA troops and come back. And if he does, we are fucked and not in a good way. There's one breaking news story that happened this afternoon that I want to share with you. That's awesome. The Biden-Harris administration today announced that they would support waiving intellectual property protections for COVID-19 vaccines. That's huge. And what happened was, oh, let me see if I can't find the data on this. The pharmaceutical stocks took a massive dump, or as we call them in our house, a Trump. They did. They dropped precipitously. And of course, now I can't find that chart here. U.S. backs waiving patent protections for COVID vaccines, citing global health crisis, which is a good thing, so that now these developing countries who can't afford to pay the ridiculous, patent fees to get the vaccines don't have to worry about it, right? Such a waiver could remove obstacles to ramping up the production of vaccines in developing countries. The move comes as coronavirus infections surge to their highest levels in countries that have struggled to procure or distribute vaccines. Well, the major pharmaceutical company stocks took a nosedive. Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, not quite so much, but they all dropped. And you know what? Good. Serves you right. And I got to say, we, the taxpayer, helped finance the research and development. And for those of you who, and I got to put Randy Rhodes in here, too. She went on. I heard a little bit of her show yesterday when she was freaking out. I don't want to get it. And it's an experiment. No, it isn't. This mRNA, I know I'm screwing it up, the kind of vaccine that Pfizer and Moderna use, these the RNA things, these have been in development for many years because the COVID-19 is a novel coronavirus, but it is a coronavirus, and that's what they've been working on. And this is new technology that is wiping this virus out. It's irresponsible not to get the shot right now. Irresponsible. And I don't care if you're scared of the needle or you're afraid of the side effects. You do the right thing and you take the damn vaccine. Anyway, the U.S. Trade Representative, Katherine Tai, who was widely applauded upon her nomination and confirmation by progressives. So we like her. She's on the right side of things. She issued a statement. Here's what she said. This is a global health crisis, and the extraordinary circumstances of the COVID-19 problem pandemic call for extraordinary measures. The administration believes strongly in intellectual property protections, but in service of ending this pandemic, supports the waiver of those protections for COVID-19 vaccines. We will actively participate in text-based negotiations at the World Trade Organization needed to make that happen. Those negotiations will take time, given the consensus-based nature of the institution and the complexity of the issues involved. The administration's aim is to get as many safe and effective vaccines to as many people as fast as possible. As our vaccine supply for the American people is secured, the administration will continue to ramp up its efforts, working with the private sector and all possible partners to expand vaccine manufacturing and distribution. It will also work to increase the raw materials needed to produce those vaccines. So that's a good thing. And in case you're wondering, there was other news today. For instance, you know, you win one, you lose one. Here's one we lost. A federal judge vacated the CDC's nationwide eviction moratorium that was enacted during the pandemic to protect people who lost their jobs and had no money coming in and couldn't go out and get work. And this is leaving many Americans in danger of being homeless. The CDC imposed the ban in September. Biden extended it until July. But this judge, Friedrich, today questioned the CDC's authority to impose such a moratorium and did away with it. So, again, it's one step up, often two steps back. Hopefully we'll reverse that. So it's two steps up and just one back. And then we can keep moving forward. But get vaccinated. If you haven't been yet, do it. My kid got her second shot yesterday. So we're on our way. And, we're up against the odds because too many idiots listen to Fox and OAN and, you know, are anti-vaccine. So we're fighting a huge disinformation campaign. And at a time when we need truth. John Lennon said it. Give me some truth. All right. With that, we come to the end of an hour. Thanks for hanging with me today. Tomorrow, I've got two interviews that are recorded today for the rest of the week. So we have Stephanie Kelton coming up, and we have the authors of this book, Driving While Brown. We'll figure it out, but be here. We've got good shows coming up for the rest of the week. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.